You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hello, I'm Michael Piotrush. Welcome to another recording of articles from Popular Science Magazine, a presentation of Airs LA. This week's articles include, at 59 seconds, after the asteroid, the earliest bird ancestors thrived in Antarctica. At 7 minutes 32 seconds, Scotland is not banning cats. And at 12 minutes 24 seconds, agencies plan for near-Earth asteroids close encounter in 2032. Let's get to it. This first article is from the Science Dinosaurs section and is entitled, After the Asteroid, the Earliest Bird Ancestors Thrived in Antarctica. Written by Laura Baesis, published February 5, 2025. The duck-like Vagavis eei had strong jaws for snatching fish. This article begins with an illustration of two long-beaked birds. Its caption reads, The late Cretaceous modern bird, Vagavis eei, diving for fish in the shallow ocean off the coast of the Antarctic Peninsula, with ammonites and plesiosaurs for company. With its glaciers and sub-zero temperatures, Antarctica hardly seems like a place of refuge. However, the now icy continent might have been just that for the early ancestors of today's living water birds, especially after an asteroid slammed into the Earth. A newly described fossil indicates that an early relative of ducks and geese called Vagavis eei lived in Antarctica the same time that Tyrannosaurus rex was stomping around North America. The fossil is described in a study published February 5th in the journal Nature and shows that the continent was a key location in bird evolution. After a dinosaur-killing asteroid struck the Earth near the Yucatan Peninsula in present-day Mexico about 66 million years ago, about 75% of species on Earth eventually went extinct. However, Antarctica may have been somewhat protected because of its distance from the impact site. Fossil evidence suggests that the landmass had a temperate climate with lush vegetation, so it could have been the perfect location for the earliest members of the avian group that now includes geese and ducks. The fossil in this new study was collected in 2011 during an expedition by the Antarctic Peninsula Paleontology Project. It is a nearly complete Vagavis eei skull, one of the earliest known birds dating back to the latest part of the Cretaceous period, roughly 69.2 to 68.4 million years ago. The authors generated a near-complete three-dimensional reconstruction of the new skull to study its anatomy. They found that Vagavis has a long, pointed beak and a brain shape that is considered unique among all the known birds previously discovered from the Mesozoic era, which includes the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous periods. During the Mesozoic, non-avian dinosaurs and an eclectic collection of early birds such as Archaeopteryx flew in different parts of the Earth. Vagavis's long beak and brain shape place it in the group that includes all modern birds and represents the earliest evidence of birds' eventual widespread distribution across the planet. There is an additional photo. Its caption reads, Digital reconstruction of the late Cretaceous, approximately 69 million years old, crown bird, Vagavis eei, that was completed following high-resolution microcomputed tomography of a fossil-bearing concretion discovered on the Vega Island, Arctic Peninsula. Vagavis was first reported 20 years ago by study co-author Julia Clark from the University of Texas at Austin and several colleagues. Initially, it was proposed as an early member of modern birds within the waterfowl group. However, modern birds are very rare in the fossil record from before the end Cretaceous extinction, and more recent studies have shed some doubt on where Vagavis should be on the bird evolutionary tree. Quote, few birds are as likely to start as many arguments among paleontologists as Vigavis, unquote. Christopher Torres, a study co-author and paleontologist at the University of the Pacific, said in a statement, quote, this new fossil is going to help resolve a lot of those arguments, chief among them, where is Vigavis perched in the bird tree of life, unquote. There is an additional illustration showing a pair of long-beaked birds called Vigavis eei. Its caption reads, a pair of Vigavis eei, the earliest known modern bird at 69 million years ago, foraging for fish and other animals in the late Cretaceous ocean off the coast of the Antarctic Peninsula. The nearly complete skull detailed in this new study puts some of that skepticism to rest. It shows several traits, including the shape of the brain and beak bones, that are consistent with that of modern birds and waterfowl specifically. One of the main differences between modern waterfowl is that Vigavis's skull has traces of powerful jaw muscles that were useful for overcoming water resistance while diving to snatch fish. Additionally, the skull features and other parts of its skeleton suggest that Vigavis used its feet for underwater propulsion while pursuing fish and other prey. This feeding strategy is more like what gerbies and loons use. The known birds discovered in other parts of the planet from the late Cretaceous period are barely recognizable by modern bird standards. Additionally, most of the sites that preserve delicate bird fossils from the Cretaceous yield specimens that are so incomplete that scientists can only get hints at their identity. Quote, this fossil underscores that Antarctica has much to tell us about the earliest stages of modern bird evolution, unquote, study co-author and Ohio University paleontologist Patrick O'Connor said in a statement. Quote, and those few places with any substantial fossil record of late Cretaceous birds, like Madagascar and Argentina, reveal an aviary of bizarre, now extinct species with teeth and long, bony tails, only distantly related to modern birds. Something very different seems to have been happening in the far reaches of the southern hemisphere, unquote. This next article is from the Environment Animals Wildlife section and is entitled, Relax, Whiskers, Scotland is not banning cats. Written by Laura Baesis, published February 5th, 2025. The Scottish Animal Welfare Commission estimates that domestic felines annually kill at least 27 million animals in the UK. This article begins with a photo of an orange kitten with its paw up. Its caption reads, domestic cats can be considered an invasive species. Cat lovers in Scotland can breathe a collective sigh of relief. The Scottish government will not be banning felines in the country, home to an estimated 840,000 pet cats. First Minister John Swinney issued a statement after a report issued on January 27 by the Scottish Animal Welfare Commission said that cats were a threat to the country's wildlife. The commission suggested measures to reduce their damage, including restrictions on ownership, were interpreted by some as an all-out ban on cats, and rumors quickly spread online. Quote, there's a report being produced by an external organization which has come into the government for consideration, unquote, Swinney said via radio. Quote, let me just clear this up today. The government's not going to be banning cats or restricting cats. We have no intention of doing so and will not be doing it, unquote. Outdoor cats can be destructive to the environment by killing native bird species and smaller mammals like squirrels and mice, and can be considered an invasive species. They can also spread diseases, including rabies and parasitic infections. Cats are the primary hosts of the parasite Toxoplasma gondii. Most become infected by accidentally ingesting the parasite through contact with cat feces. The majority of people who become infected with Toxoplasma gondii do not experience symptoms, but severe infection can cause damage to the brain, eyes, and other organs. In 2022, Poland officially listed domestic cats as an invasive alien species due to their environmental impacts. Cats are believed to have caused the most destruction in Australia than any other continent, where they are estimated to have driven 27 native animals to extinction since colonization began in 1788. However, some countries, including Italy, Austria, and Japan, have laws on the books that protect cats, particularly feral cat colonies. The United States is home to an estimated 76.5 million cats, with several households owning more than one. Rules regarding pet ownership, vaccination, and spaying/neutering vary by state, with Rhode Island being the only state that requires cat licensing. In their report, the Scottish Animal Welfare Commission said cats annually kill at least 27 million birds and other animals throughout the United Kingdom. It advised that the government consider keeping domestic cats on leashes or indoors as one way to protect endangered species, including Scottish wildcats. Some of the various cat containment measures were listed as restrictions on introducing cats to households in vulnerable areas. Cats Protection, the largest cat charity in the UK, responded to the containment measures, stressing simple solutions like keeping cats indoors at dawn and dusk to help balance the needs of both wild animals and domestic cats. Quote, "Scotland is a nation of cat lovers," unquote, Alice Palumbo, Cat Protection's Advocacy and Government Relations Officer for Scotland, told the Associated Press. Quote, "Cats are great pets for all sorts of reasons, whether it's providing companionship for elderly people or those living alone, comfort for people with health conditions, or helping children learn important lessons in caring for others," unquote, she said. Quote, "We believe everyone who is able to care for a cat should be able to enjoy these benefits," unquote. According to the College of Natural Sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, cat owners can lessen the impact an outdoor cat can have on the environment by training their felines to walk on a leash. They also suggest an enclosed catio space outside with plenty of toys and structures to give the cats exercise, play, stimulation, fresh air, and sun. This final article is from the Science, Space, Solar System section and is entitled Agencies Plan for Near-Earth Asteroids Close Encounter in 2032, written by Andrew Paul, published January 30, 2025. But it's not time to build a bunker. This article begins with a photo of an artist illustration of an asteroid in space. Its caption reads, "Asteroids the size of 2024 YR4 strike Earth every few thousand years." A recently discovered sizable asteroid may come within striking distance of Earth in less than 8 years. But although the rock is potentially even larger than the one believed responsible for the historic Tunguska event in 1908, the odds are currently in humanity's favor. On December 27, 2024, the Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System, ATLAS, telescope in Rio Hurtado, Chile, detected a hunk of space rock approximately 828,800 kilometers, 515,000 miles, from Earth. Astronomers confirmed the object as a near-Earth asteroid and cataloged it as 2024 YR4. But additional calculations soon raised red flags. Its estimated 130 to 328 feet diameter and potential orbital path meant that, for the first time ever, an asteroid met the requirements to trigger two UN-endorsed global planetary defense groups, the International Asteroid Warning Network, IAWN, and the Space Mission Planning Advisory Group, SMPAG. Once initiated, the organizations leverage every available research telescope around the world to train their lenses on the object and gather as much data as possible. 2024 YR4 is now speeding away from Earth, but astronomers gleaned enough information to estimate when it might return. Based on the available calculations, the asteroid will again near the planet on December 22, 2032. When it does, there's an approximately 1.3% chance it will hit us. Quote, "Asteroid 2024 YR4 has an almost 99% chance of safely passing Earth on 22 December 2032, unquote, the European Space Agency said in its announcement on January 29, while still cautioning that, quote, a possible impact cannot yet be entirely ruled out, unquote. Any percentage indicating an asteroid strike might cause some people to worry, but as it stands, the odds remain incredibly slim. Putting it another way, might offer further assurance against space-induced catastrophe. While 2024 YR4 currently checks all the boxes for level 3 on the Torino Impact Hazard Scale, the asteroid warning system's definition makes it clear that such objects will most likely be reclassified down to zero pending additional telescopic observations. Astronomers may only have a limited window to gather more information, however. The ESA noted on Wednesday that 2024 YR4's elongated path around the Sun currently has it moving away from Earth in nearly a straight line, making it hard to learn its orbit. Experts likely have a few months before the asteroid begins fading from view. Until then, international agencies will continue coordinating their telescopes to observe 2024 YR4. This includes employing the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Chile. Astronomers also estimate the asteroid will become observable once again in 2028, allowing for further analysis. While 2024 YR appears unlikely to hit Earth, such events do happen every few thousand years. When they do, the damage is impressive. The Tunguska event, for example, is believed to have occurred after a roughly 130 feet wide asteroid exploded over Siberia in 1908. Over 800 square miles of forest was flattened by the resulting force, or over twice the area of New York City. If 2024 YR4 ends up topping out at astronomers' maximum 328 feet wide estimate, the fallout could be even worse. Available information doesn't narrow down a potential strike zone much, but that will also likely change as more data is collected. Regardless, based on what the experts already know, there's no real reason to start digging your asteroid bunker. And if those predictions are revised for the worse, there's already plenty of agencies readying plans to knock problematic space rocks out of Earth's path. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's material from Popular Science Magazine. I'm Michael Piotrasch, and I'll be back soon with more interesting articles. Thank you for listening.